This last week, I was with my my family for Thanksgiving. And while I was there, one thing I was thinking about was when we were kids and we would visit our grandparents on Thanksgiving, and I realized, oh, my parents have become the grandparents. And I thought, the story goes on. But I'd like to tell you a story about one of my grandparents, of my grandfather, my maternal grandfather. This goes back a number of years when my grandfather was dying of congestive heart failure. He lived in the state of Washington, and my wife and I decided to fly out and see him while he was still living rather than going to the funeral. And he knew why we were there. When we got there, we chatted for just a few minutes, but almost immediately, he started giving us a tour of the house. It was a very small house, but it was full of stuff. And every few steps, he would stop and he would pick up a picture or some object and tell us a story about it. The pictures were mostly of people I had never known, relatives I had never known, many of them I had never heard of. But he would tell us their stories and about how their lives had shaped his life. And he also showed us the tools of his trade, the family trade, which was logging. And every logging tool had a story behind it, a story of working in the mountains of Washington and Oregon. Now, I had always liked my grandfather. He was a very irascible man. He had a sharp sense of humor and a sharp way with words. Not exactly a lovey-dovey grandfather, but someone who just fascinated me. Growing up, I didn't know anyone else quite like him. But, you know, I don't think I ever really knew him until that day. Not until I heard the story of his life, the story of a family living a hard life in the mountains of the Pacific Northwest, a story full of love and losses, full of great tragedy that I had never known, a story, above all, about my own roots, about what had given shape to my life without me even knowing it. And this is what we do, isn't it? We make our lives into stories. Stories about where we've come from, what's shaped us, what's important to us, who we are. I have come to realize that if we really want to understand each other, if we really want to understand ourselves, we need to listen to these stories. And that's what I loved about the words for the chalice lighting I shared. We need to be, if we want to understand anything at all, we need to become giant ears. And that's the mission of StoryCorps. Have you heard about StoryCorps? Have you heard that on NPR? They provide a way for people to record and share their stories, usually being interviewed by someone close to them. According to its website, StoryCorps does this to remind one another of our shared humanity, to strengthen and build the connections between people, to teach the value of listening, and to weave into the fabric of our culture the understanding that everyone's story matters. I think that the Jazz Poetry Slam serves the same purpose. Did anyone go to the Jazz Poetry Slam this last month? This was my first experience, and it was amazing. It is technically a poetry competition. People get up and recite poems about basically the stories of their lives, and they are judged. But I will tell you that the competition is not really what it's about. The Jazz Poetry Slam is about speaking the truth. Speaking the truth of our experiences, speaking of both joys and sorrows, telling the stories of our lives. After this year's event, I reached out to Marlene Barney, who, for the record, was this year's winner. And I asked her why she wanted to express herself in this way. In an email, she wrote, "For me, expressing my innermost thoughts, feelings, ideas, and passions is both liberating and empowering. I get to share the stuff that's on my mind, and in return, I get to measure the validity of it. And by sharing my feelings and experiences, I get to unburden or vent while motivating others to laugh or cry or feel angry, to feel loving, despairing, or hopeful with me." Beautiful, beautifully said. I suspect that many of us feel the same way because we all love to tell our stories. We may not do StoryCorps, we may not go to the Jazz Poetry Slam, but we tell our stories to one another over and over again. Have you noticed this about yourself? When people ask you about your life, how do you respond? If you're like me, you eventually get around to telling stories, stories that you have told many times before. And I don't think it's something that we do consciously. I suspect that in many cases, we're not exactly sure why we tell the stories we do, not unless we really think about it. For example, for many years, I told the story of the developmental challenges I faced in my early childhood. It's true, I was born with eye problems that required 3 surgeries by the time I was 5. I needed speech therapy and corrective shoes, and I basically was later to learn to read, tie my shoes, bike, whistle, and just about everything else I could think of. And I would like to tell this story. Why did I like to tell this story? I don't think it was because I felt sorry for myself. I think actually kind of the opposite. For me, the story showed how I can overcome difficulties. And if I didn't master something at first, eventually I would get to it. And so this story was very important to me. The thing is, stories are subjective. To a certain extent, we choose how to interpret our lives. We choose what stories to tell. Oliver Sacks, a neuroscientist, was very interested in memory, in part because, not just because he was a neuroscientist, because he actually wrote 2 memoirs. And he got very interested in what we remember and how we remember. And he argued that memories are not fixed or frozen. They are transformed, disassembled, reassembled, and recategorized with every act of recollection, which is to say, we don't just tell stories, we create stories, and we recreate them with every telling. The problem is, sometimes our stories, while meaningful to us, are not always accurate, or at least there are other interpretations that are available. And as it turns out, that's something I learned about my own story of my childhood. A few years back, I was with my family on my birthday, and I sort of made a reference to the fact that I had had this sort of difficult childhood, how I was always seeming to play, having to play catch-up with my friends. And my parents were baffled. They didn't see it that way at all. The facts were essentially correct. But they just thought the interpretation was off base. Because yes, did I learn to read later than some of my friends? Yeah. And was I a little slow to learn to ride a bike? Sure. But as they saw it, as from their adult perspective, many children lag behind their peers in one area or another. That's just the way life is. So what's the big deal? And I want to say, but it was a big deal to me. But this really was a revelation. I had no idea that someone could look at my life and have such a different interpretation. And an interpretation that now, as an adult, kind of makes more sense to me. And I think this is something to bear in mind when it comes to our relationships with others, especially with our close family and friends. It's easy to assume that we all experience events in the same way, or that we remember events in the same way, that there's some sort of objective reality that we can all refer to. But it's just not that simple. This is especially apparent when it comes to childhood. We might share the same house with a person for many years. We might have many of the same experiences, and yet come away with very different memories, very different interpretations. You know, was one parent concerned and caring, or distant and indifferent? Were we provided for, or did we often go wanting? These questions seem so black and white, and yet children within the same family will have very different answers to them. My sense is that we begin to tell ourselves stories at a very young age, stories about how the world works and how we fit into the scheme of things. And as we grow older, we use these stories to interpret new experiences. Now, our stories might change over time as we have new experiences and that don't really fit our existing stories. But by and large, as we grow older, I think we tend to settle on a given story and we stick with it. In this way, we can grow up side by side with someone and yet come away with a completely different way of seeing the world. No wonder our holiday get-togethers can be filled with such conflict, because we will have very different views of what life is about what happened to us when we were young. Very different views. And as long as we don't recognize how we came at the views that we arrived at, we're going to have a tendency to be in conflict. But if we understand the dynamics here, if we accept that someone else might have a completely different take on life for reasons we'll never know, that gives us a little breathing room. Chris Grosso, a Buddhist writer, puts it this way: everything other people say and do is just a reflection of their internal world and beliefs, as is everything we say and do. And when we really take this to heart, we can allow others to be who they are, feel what they feel, think what they think, and say what they say, and not take any of it personally, because it has nothing to do with us. It has nothing to do with us. This view makes it possible to practice what I call compassionate unknowing. Compassionate unknowing is about giving someone the benefit of the doubt, recognizing that this other person's behavior, however puzzling it may be for us, reflects something of the story of that person's life. It makes sense to them. We'll never know why it makes sense to them, but it makes sense to them. If we recognize this, then rather getting into a fight, we can feel compassion for them and let it slide. I really thought about this recently when I was reading this book, came across this passage. It was just something that just sort of jumped off the page to me. The writer said, you can't really love another person until you recognize them as other. And the reason that passage jumped out at me was because that was like such an antithesis to what I believe. You know, I really believe in common humanity and really learning to see the humanity in each other. But this writer's point was that we have a tendency, when we have that view, to view the other person as sort of similar to us, as sort of living in the same world as us. And so when they act in a way that we don't understand, we get angry. We get angry, we get frustrated, we don't understand it. When we recognize another person as other, we are recognizing that they have their own story. They have had their own experiences, their own interpretations of those experiences, and that is what they're living out. Only when we love someone as other, recognize them as having integrity in their own life, can we truly love them. That's compassionate, unknowing. And I don't know about you, but I find this idea incredibly freeing. I find it freeing not just when dealing with family members or close friends, but anytime I encounter someone whose behavior puzzles me or puts me off, I can tell myself there is a story there. I'll never know what it is, but there is a story there. And I can feel compassion for them. We also have an opportunity to extend grace to ourselves, to take a step back and look at the stories we tell ourselves. Listen to the stories that we tell ourselves. To ask ourselves, how well do these stories serve us? Do they make sense of our life in a way that helps us carry forward? Or do they hold us back, make us fearful? We can't always control the events of our lives. Sometimes difficult and awful stuff happens and we can do nothing about it. But to an extent, we have a choice in how we think about these things, and how these stories fit in or shape the larger stories of our lives. If we find ourselves limited or trapped by our stories, we might think about telling our stories in a new way. This is what we heard in the reading from Jan Richardson. She talks about the idea of looking at the threads of our lives and seeing if there might be a different pattern there that we haven't noticed before, a new design that wants to emerge. And this is something I heard over and over again at the Jazz Poetry Slam. Some of the stories we heard that evening were heartbreaking. They were stories of anguish, loss, and regret. But those same stories were also uplifting. They were stories of resilience, healing, and growth. And I suspect that this is what my grandfather was doing when he shared his stories. He took the events of a sometimes difficult life and wove them into a story that gave his life meaning. And he offered that story to me as his parting gift. May we each be so fortunate. May we each find meaning in the messiness of our lives. May we each find and tell a story that sustains us, a story to offer as a gift to others. And may our stories remind us of our shared humanity. May they strengthen and build the connections between us. May it be so. Amen.